just one of those things we always need to remember. It has become very much linked in with that in ways that can, or some people can find helpful, and others can find very difficult. Just in the way, same way as we sometimes talk about God as Father, which can be a very difficult concept for some people because of their experiences of their fathers, so too this whole picture of Mothering Sunday asks questions of us, because we all have different experiences of our parents, our dads, our mums. And some of those experiences will be good, and some of them will be very difficult. Some of them might have finished, some of them might be ongoing. So I want us to get back a little bit more to that original idea. Mothering Sunday was about a time during Lent when people who worked in big houses as servants for rich people used to be given a Sunday off to go home, to go back to their home church. The church was very often kind of thought or described as being female. So you would go back to your mother church. There was this idea that the church was the bride of Christ. So, Mother Church, and that's where we want to think a little bit more about today. This idea of what does a Mother Church, what might it look like? So what I want you to do first is just to listen to a Bible reading, which Jenny's going to bring us, and that's from 2 Kings chapter 4. So Jenny will listen to you first. I just did that little link because I'd forgotten that we'd put that in the service. I'm sorry. Do you want to use that one up there?
Okay.
No, up there.
Oh, God, sorry.
Yeah.
It's the first reading, and it comes from 2 Kings 4, verses 1 to 7. Now the wife of a member of the company of prophets cried to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, but a creditor has come to take my two children as slaves." Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" She answered, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." He said, "Go outside and borrow vessels from all your neighbours, empty vessels, not just a few. Then go in and shut the door behind you and your children and start pouring into all these vessels. When each is full, set it aside." So she left him and shut the door behind her and her children. They kept bringing vessels to her, and she kept pouring. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." But he said to her, "There are no more." Then the oil stopped flowing. She came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your children can live on the rest." Amen.
There is in that passage just that remembrance that not all families are the same. Her husband had died, their dad had died, and so their family was different than many others. And we know that people grow up in all sorts of different family mixes. But what I want us to try and think about initially is to think with each other. So I want you to turn to others and begin talking. Mum with children, I think you ought to sort of go and talk to someone else and let the children talk about you and other. No. But to talk about what do you feel makes a good home? What do you feel makes a good home? Okay? So just turn to one another, talk with each other, think for a few minutes about what do you think makes a good home? Right? Acceptance of who we are with us. Yeah, a deep love kind of thing. Yes?
A sense of humour.
I know your family, you're right. No. Yeah, sense of humour. Anything else? Yes? The love of a good mother. I want to say a love of a good father. I want to just say love. Yeah. Yeah, without love. Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk more about love in a minute. So that's good. Yes, Ian?
We said food and fellowship.
Food and fellowship. Yeah. Be able to sit down at a table and chat and talk with people, yeah? Yeah, while eating good food. Always good. Always good. Anything else? Okay. So, if we...
Care for each other.
Oh, okay. Yes? Care for each other. Care for each other. In a sense, that story kind of that we heard showed some of those kinds of ideas, didn't it? That sense of, here is a mum who's been left on her own and she's desperate to know a way forward. She doesn't want to leave her children who could be taken into slavery because she's got debt she can't pay. And yet, she, in her love for those children, wants to do all she can, but doesn't know what she can do. So I'm going to add in something here that I think she shows. And that's a willingness to think or to understand you can't always do everything on your own. And you won't always get everything right. I mean, I know most of you will get everything right all the time. But we know in families we don't always get things right. But actually, there is something about tolerance and respect and care for one another that sometimes can help to overcome some of that. That acceptance, really important word, and that feeling safe in that place. So what the widow does is she asks for help. And this, in a sense, is where I want us to move on in what the way we're thinking. Because it seems to me that if we talk about church as mother, mothering church, then there is something about our community here that must be like that we see as the best of home. That it should be a place where we feel accepted, where we feel safe, where we feel tolerated, understood, where we feel as though we can have good food and fellowship, really important, where we feel loved and held. They're really important things, not just for a home that we might live in, but a place like a church, which too we can see as the idea of our home church or our family in a different way. Elisha, if we kind of think Elisha stands for the church in this instance, there's also about that giving help to others. And so that's one of the things for us as a home, as a church. How is it that we can help each other? All of these things we want to explore a bit further after we sing our next song. And our next song is Jesus Put This Song Into Our Hearts. Jenny. So we've talked about love. We've mentioned it in our first part. We've heard it in that reading. So I'm going to give you just a very easy, simple task now. With each other, talking again. Define love. There you go. I've not given you quite as much time this time because I knew you'd find that such an easy task to do. So, anyone want to say something about how they might define love?
Kindness and caring.
Kindness and caring? What you do for one another?
Love is sacrifice. Love is sacrifice.
Love is sacrifice. Okay.
Putting the needs of the other before your own.
Putting the needs of the other before your own. Compassion. See, I love the word compassion. I think it's such a word so full of meaning. And in a sense, almost love is only a part of compassion, I think. But that's my bias. Anyone else? Yes, Vicky.
We decided that you can't define it because philosophers can't define it. But you know it by its symptoms, which is what people have been saying.
Really hard, difficult, possibly impossible to define, but you know it when you feel it. You know it when you feel it. Yeah. I kind of want to add it's a universal language. Love is understood in any language. Of course, in this country, because we've only got one word for it, really, it actually empties itself of meaning, or we've got one word to try and encompass so much. In the Bible, there's four different words that are often used. So how on earth we managed with one? So I'm going to tell you one I came across recently. It might be interesting to know. About 8-9 months ago, I went to a conference, and there was a speaker there called Thomas J. Ord from America. And he was talking about he's actually finished it now, but he was kind of trying testing some bits of it. And he said, in his understanding, he's the first one to attempt to write a systematic theology of love. He says, it's at the heart of everything the Bible kind of speaks at, but no one has ever written, he doesn't think, a systematic theology of love. Anyway, he's written his first book and he's decided he's got to spend 2 more books doing it because it's obviously so. But anyway, there's this as a quotation from it. He's put, love is best defined as acting intentionally in relational response to God and others to promote overall well-being. I'll say that again. And then, Vicky, you can tell me if philosophers have ever come anywhere near it. Love is best defined as acting intentionally in relational response to God and others to promote overall well-being. What do you think of that as a definition? No. I will write to Thomas and tell him that you've already put his book to one side. Why no?
It just seems too, I don't know, analytical in some ways.
Too analytical.
It's reduced it down.
Okay.
It's
not always intentional. That's one of my biggest things about this. I think love can be an intentional thing, but actually it's much better, I was going to say, when it's unintentional. What I mean by that is when it's just a natural part, you just do it. Yeah. Yeah, it's a natural part of who we are and what we do and the way we are. I think working for the well-being of all, I think that's a lovely part of it, but that intentionality, and so analytical, you're right. So yes, I will write to him and tell him that his book won't go on for sale in this church. I'll read it, probably I'll read the book first and then I'll do it. Anyway. But love is that which, in a sense, binds us. Love which that which is God and is of God. And for me, that's the heart of my theology, my kind of belief, my faith in all of this. That part of John's letter where he says, God is love. Where there is love, there is God. Now, there's a number of things about that for me. Firstly, that doesn't mean to say you have to be a Christian to be godly. Where there is love, there is God. It doesn't mean to say that you have to be someone who even believes in God. For where there is love, there is God. It doesn't mean that there are ways in which we should define love in ways which constrain it, make it smaller, which says only these people can love, not these people. Love has not those boundaries, those restrictions which are put on it. So if anyone ever tells you, no, I won't go down that line just for today, but there's kind of sometimes where people say, doing this because I love you. Actually, sometimes you really need to question that. Love is known, as you were saying, by its fruits, by the way we experience it. And you'll know whether something's loving or not. And it's not when someone tells you it's loving. It's when you know it and how you experience it. That's why we spend so much time, and why people like the Scouts and the Cubs and all spend so much time with understanding safeguarding regulations. Because that's talking about what love isn't. It's why important words like acceptance are there, being safe are there, because that's where you will feel safe when you know you are loved, not for anything other than who you are, the person you are, the person you are meant to be, the person with God's image inside. Love is the key. I'm not sure the Beatles got it entirely right when they sang All You Need Is Love, because you might need a bit of food as well and things like that. But love is so important in all that we do and all that we experience, and should be at the heart of how we are as community, as how we are as church. If we are not loving, if in any way we show ourselves as excluding people, not being inclusive, judging people, then we're denying what we are called to be, which is to be a people who love without condition, without restraint, who love. But loving, remember, is for the well-being of people. In Hebrew, the word that in Hebrew scripture they used was the idea of shalom. And shalom was not just a greeting of hello and that. It's not just a peace kind of sharing. Shalom is wanting the wholeness of you as a person in unity with all of creation. It's such a deep, meaningful thing of how we as individuals can flourish in the midst of this world. Shalom. Shalom is heavenly love. That love that allows us and helps us to be the people we are meant to be. May we all know shalom. So we're not going to sing the Beatles song. Look at that, you're all disappointed. Instead of that, we're going to sing a song which was popularized by the Bellamy Brothers. If you remember the Bellamy Brothers. Slightly adapted words by Sue Harrington. I can say that because she's not here. And it's called, is that allow us sometimes to make mistakes and actually still be received back, welcomed, loved, held. So really important. So let's just pray.